Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 10, chapter 16, how Parikshit received the age of Kali, text 34. O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy in the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Purport. The Asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement, and thus Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. By increase of the Asura population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted Asuras and to reestablish the true principles of religion. This was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. Om again, Timurandasya, Ganandana, Shalakya, Chakshur, Militanyena, Tasma, Shri Kudavena. Jai Shri Krishna, Jai Kudavena, Kudavena, Shri Krishna, Shri Krishna, Shri Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So this is serious business. The situation of the earth, the situation of society, and the response by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When speaking to the guests at the Soul Center yesterday, I could see how their hearts were pinched by the force of their external circumstances. External circumstances that pinch on everyone. Those external circumstances make it difficult for you to fulfill your goal of human life. Constantly you're being bombarded by so much stimuli about you should be doing this, you should be doing that, you should be buying this, you should be buying that. Even spirituality becomes a marketplace. You should be dabbling in this. You should be dabbling in that. You should be reading these books, going to these seminars, and just be open to everything and anything. All this pressure is there, exerted upon the people's hearts, and it makes it very difficult for them to gather the necessary strength and determination to continue forward in Krishna consciousness. We have to appreciate all those persons who are able to muster up a bit of strength to endeavor in Krishna consciousness, because there's so much pressure on them now. Even though people are unhappy, still there's so much pressure that they should do everything else except their Krishna consciousness. I could see this pressure on these people. They had good hearts. In their heart of hearts, they wanted to be Krishna conscious. But at the same time, they have so much pressure on them in the form of external social pressure, economic pressure. Even they have enough money still. Very careful about risking anything for their own spiritual development. So I could see this. We asked them, how do they perceive they'll be like 15 years from now? What kind of state of mind do they think they'll be in? What kind of circumstances? So many of them said that, well, by that time, I want to be Krishna conscious. I want that my Krishna consciousness increases. So I asked, well, if that's what you want 15 years from now, what about now? Gradually. Well, why gradually if something is good? And what you're doing now is not fulfilling, then why so gradually? And then everyone just kind of gave a look like, and you could feel the weight that's pressing on them. The weight of false obligation, false commitment, false responsibility, false conformity. It's like they're trying to wake up from a dream and they've only partially awakened. They just can't shake that dream completely. They can't imagine. Just like when you've been sleeping all night and you're attached to sleeping. If someone would tell you, just jump out of bed right now, you would just, well, we can't do that. Maybe this happened in the ashram. Get up, Prabhu! And you're just feeling so cozy and you're sleeping. You know you've got things to do. You know there are important things to be done. But you just can't imagine just standing up straight and getting up out of bed, right? You know how that feels like? It just seems something you don't do. Frankly, barbaric or uncivilized. I remember back in the early days of ISKCON, you know, when movement was young, the devotees were young, and things could get a bit fanatical. I remember one Maharaj, way back then, 30 years ago, was giving a brahmachari class on how to live in the ashram. So he kind of said into the microphone very fiercely, and when that alarm clock rings, you get up immediately! Jump out of your sleeping bag! Say your Brahma mantra. Now, in the mood of that time, it sounded like, yes, this is really fired up. These days, you probably, you know, give you a couple of minutes to come to. But it seems practically crazy. How do you just jump out of bed, jump out of your sleeping bag, whatever? No, you need about a half hour, right, Tigran? So, similarly, people who are lost in the dream of material existence can't understand how all they have to do is just get out of bed, get out of their unnecessary circumstances and responsibilities. It just seems impossible for them. They admit, I'm caught in this dream, so I just gotta, you know, just gradually open my eyes, gradually climb out of bed. That's the way things are done. They just can't conceive of just waking up. So they all said like that, 15 years from now, yeah, I intend to be more Krishna conscious and I'll be in a nice Krishna conscious situation. I said, that's fine. I was listening. Oh, really? About that now? Of course, we do appreciate that people take up Krishna consciousness at different speeds. We do appreciate it. At the same time, it's our job to point out that there's nothing holding you back from waking up now. We'll handle whatever speed you want to come to Krishna consciousness. Whatever rate you want to proceed, we're open to that. At the same time, it's our duty to point out there's nothing stopping you from waking up right now. So in this way, we are flexible and truthful. We don't shortchange the people. I tell them, I agree, it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious right now. It won't work. Yeah, just take your time. Just, do a little bit what you can here and there. Yeah. we don't want to shortchange people's spiritual potential, because some people can accelerate. At the same time, we don't drive away those who just want to snooze for a while. So we're open to it all while presenting what is the reality. Look, sooner or later you're going to have to wake up. So why not now? Look at the advantages of waking up now. Oh, but you want to half snooze for 10 more years. All right, still we'll work with you. We'll take care of you. So this is magnanimity. This is compassion. To deal with all kinds of patients. There's always going to be a few who are the, you know, who just decide, okay, that's it. Either I sleep or I'm awake. So I'm going to be awake, I'm going to be awake now. There are always those types. But then there's always those who, you know, have so many attachments. Not simply physical attachments, but mental attachments. In other words, they can't conceive of dropping all their false obligations. Their senses are attached to things. Their mind is attached to things. Just like the gross senses like to roam, similarly the mind likes to roam. And many people feel uncomfortable about Krishna consciousness because it seems to stop their mind from roaming. And some find that to be uncomfortable. They delight in their mind kind of dallying here and there, much like someone walking aimlessly up and down the street, looking at all the shop windows and looking at the sky and the clouds, looking at the ground, looking at the people, and just... Whereas Krishna consciousness focuses your mind upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service. So some people mistake that as sectarianism, as artificial. Well, why should you control your mind? Just let it wander and amble wherever it likes. That's natural. They understand that by focusing on Krishna's lotus feet, you're focusing on the source of everything. Krishna is more than everything. From those lotus feet of Krishna, everything emanates. So, it's not that you're becoming narrow-minded by focusing on Krishna. Many New Agers, of course, think like this. Oh, there's spirituality everywhere. Why so much? You're just talking about Krishna, Krishna. Even professors who teach, so-called teach, Bhagavad Gita at university, they protest, quite a few of them, that you Hare Krishnas, you have your own interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, which is very narrow. Srila Sivaram Maharaj was telling me how when he was in Montreal many years ago as a young devotee, he had done a university program, and he made the presentation, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and afterwards the professor stood up and chastised him and then made his own speech to the students, like, look, this is your own private interpretation of Bhagavad Gita, but we professors know better. You have your sectarian analysis of Krishna. That's just one of many possibilities. So then the professor turned to the students and began to enlighten them in Bhagavad Dharma. And Krishna refers to this, whatever you like, the Pandavas, whatever, it's all just about symbolism. It's all about just introducing you to the reality that there are many paths, many yogas. So, Maharaj told me after, he went and told that to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was there at the time. It was Prabhupada's response, sue him. In other words, don't take this sitting down. Sue him. Prabhupada said, he is presenting himself publicly that he knows Bhagavad Gita better than us. Sue him. we were discussing, you know, the Bhaktivedanta Institute and how Prabhupada's vision of the Bhaktivedanta Institute was a challenging force, rather than just kind of being sweet and nice. But, you know, the Prabhupada's expression was, you know, put your poop in their face. So, this kind of contamination that, well, your spiritual expression's up to you, each person has his or her own way, and it's up to you to find that way that's good for you. This disease ruins so many people's spiritual endeavors. Even they come to Krishna consciousness, and they can't focus after some time because deep down inside there's this impersonalism. Impersonalism means whatever, whoever, however, something will happen. No one here would like to be treated impersonally. You all have your specific personal desires and wants, likes and dislikes. Everyone recognizes that. But why is it when it comes to Krishna, then suddenly we throw all that out the window and say, oh, well, you can be spiritual in your own way, whatever way you like. If there's really a Krishna, he'll appreciate that you're just doing something that's vaguely spiritual. Anyway, the universe is gradually evolving toward perfection. So if you're just one with the universe, it'll be you, you'll be it, and perfection will automatically be yours. This is a disease. And this is part of the contamination in the atmosphere that makes it difficult for people to come to Krishna consciousness. It seems, but wouldn't it be so nice if everyone just said, whatever you're doing is spiritual, whatever you're doing is good. Wouldn't that make a better world? Suppose at the soul center, everyone who came in, we're just about recognizing that whatever everyone is doing is spiritual in its own way, and we're just here to give that message. Wow, there would be great rejoicing. The Haris have finally woken up. They've laid down their battle axe. We're just here to encourage you in whatever you're doing, because we know that we're all spiritual, and we know the universe is automatically evolving toward perfection. And no. We don't do that because we actually understand Bhagavad Gita. Not because we're sectarian. We have the most comprehensive, deep spiritual understanding. What can we do? We don't keep it to ourselves. We share it with everyone. The big enemy is impersonalism. And that impersonalism makes it very convenient for materialists to make their schemes. Because through impersonalism, you ignore Krishna. Ignoring Krishna means ignoring his instructions. And since everything is everything and everyone is spiritual some kind of way, this kind of way, it means everyone can just make their own plans. That's the name of the game. Make your own plans. So now you're living in a society in which no one consults Shastra in order to order society. And the result is, everyone is simply mad over economic development. That's it. And so much of their salary goes to military development through taxes. Just like in the recent response to Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, the press, you know, was referring to, how could it be that the world's only remaining superpower responded so slowly? I mean, what do you mean the world's only remaining superpower? The only superpower that's always been in this world is material nature. No one's defeated material nature. But these fools, they based on military strength. That's the only remaining superpower. Wow, look what happened. Just some wind and rain combined, and you're finished. Even just recently, the president of the USA, he made a speech. He had said, I have to admit, our country is not prepared enough for terrorism and natural disasters. Of course, you know, he was there with a sad face. You have to admit that, you know. It's not prepared. It's not able to handle it. What does that really mean? It means more taxes, more police, a bigger army. That's what it means. You know, it's not humility. You know, like, I just have to admit to the citizens that, you know, we're just not prepared. You know, it's just an overture to say, just see, in order to stop terrorism, stop natural disasters, we need more tax monies, more police, more army. You see, the army is not just for fighting in Iraq. The army is also for rescuing cities from hurricanes. Dual purpose. In this way, all the citizens are benefiting. So, it may be a little difficult for us to understand. How can the earth be overburdened by military strength? What's a big deal? Their armies, big military budgets. So what? This is always going on. It's hard, maybe, for us to see that this is actually demoniac life. We just take it as normal. Similarly, we take such an inordinate emphasis upon economic development as a normal thing. Yeah, people are out making money. It's just the way it is. But according to Shastra, this is demoniac. This is totally strange. A very deviant condition. And the earth takes it personally. Now you may feel uncomfortable hearing that the earth is a personality. Every planet has a predominating personality. But there's been no successful explanation of the universe in terms of simply inert matter. Even within your ordinary experience, everywhere you look, you see a person in charge of something. I haven't met the mayor of Swansea, but I assume there is a mayor. So no, you haven't met the mayor of the earth. But why should you say there's no Bhumi, because I haven't met her. So many things are beyond the range of our senses. In Krishna Leela, what were the circumstances of Krishna's advent? The earth was feeling overburdened, too much emphasis on military development. And so, with an aggrieved mentality, Bhumi approached Lord Brahma along with other demigods. You see, everything is personal. Compassion is at the basis of all the responses of the devotees. The demigods are devotees with attachment to control. So, Bhumi, accompanied by other demigods, went to approach Brahma based on this compassion and grieving mentality. How can this earth go on like this? We also feel that burden now. How long can this go on that people are so distracted from the need to be Krishna conscious? So much pressure is on them. False responsibilities. They can't break out of the rut. So you have to be compassionate about it. The pressure is so intense. When you start to talk to them, you'll realize what they're up against due to such a demoniac society. Why is it demoniac? Does it mean you should be looking for persons with horns and pitchfork walking around everywhere? No, it's demoniac because of the extreme emphasis on economic development. And this way people's lives become consumed. Just like one of the guests yesterday was saying, when I'm 65, what will I be doing? I'm not going to retire. I'm not going to retire. I like what I'm doing. I'm not going to retire. They caught up in unnecessary expenditure of energy. They don't know anything better to do. They'll only find out something better to do by association with devotees. So unless they get to meet you, unless they get to hear from you, they're not going to know what to do. So you have to induce them to associate with devotees. so they can get a clear idea of what to do with themselves. Because very few are going to want to wake up immediately. So you, when they come, for example, to the Soul Center, it's an environment in which we're presenting the need to wake up, but at the same time we recognize not everybody wants to wake up straight away. So, okay, wake up gradually. And there'll always be some, however, that will just want to go for it. I'm going to wake up, or I wake up now. Why later? I got important things to do with this human form of life. So this way, you become a full-service hospital, able to deal with all kinds of patients. We don't shortchange the ones who want the fast track. You want to be Krishna conscious? Just slow down now. Don't get too fired up. Take it easy now. Many have been burned out trying to be too Krishna conscious. Nor do we want to turn away those who want to go slow. Because we're compassionate, we understand what the realities are that bewilder them so much. So, what happened after Bhumi and the demigods made their presentation to Brahma? They all then went to the shore of the ocean of milk. And there Brahma sat in meditation. First they offered prayers, Purusha Sukta prayers, glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a proper way how to deal with persons. If it's a respectable, superior person, you offer some glorification before you make your proposal. So, they did that. They recited the mantras, timeless Vedic mantras. And then Brahma sat in meditation, and from within his heart, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave him instruction. The other demigods couldn't hear it, but Brahma could hear it. And that's how the succession begins. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. Brahma is the original Kavi, the original scholar of the universe, and through his heart, he is enlightened. At the beginning of the cosmos, and also here in this situation, when there was a problem with the functioning of the cosmos due to demoniac developments on the Earth planet. So Brahma sat in meditation, and the Lord, from in his heart, told him, I will come. And the Lord instructed all the demigods to take birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist the Lord in his mission. So that shows you not only the super succession in action, because Brahma relayed the message to the demigods even though they couldn't hear it, but it also shows you cooperation, how the suras, the devas, willingly cooperate with the plan of the Lord. Krishna does things together with his devotees. So, a devotee means one who is eager to cooperate with the plan of the Lord. And it's all based on compassion. Things can't go on the way they are. Often now, devotees wonder, how can things go on the way they are now? When people are so lethargic about their spiritual development. They can't see time eating up their life. I was telling the people last night, my mother, she's 78, and I asked her, what is your number one realization? Besides Jesus is Lord, what is your number one realization? And she told me, I'm just shocked how time passed so quickly. How my life just passed so quickly. I'm shocked. It went like that. Yet, the nature of Maya is such that everyone thinks I have so much time to meander this way and that way, space out in this way and that way. And it's an organized effort so that people just fill their life with material activities. Just think, if you were in charge of a business, you'd want a society manipulated in such a way that people are always thinking about buying. Would that be great if you owned the business? Listen, buying is the ultimate expression of your individuality. This is what it's like in a consumerist culture. Even, I'm sure you've heard the expression, retail therapy. You know, when someone feels bad, especially ladies, they go shopping. Any of you ever done that? Well, yes. You buy and feel good. So this is very good if you own business. If you can create a worldwide culture of consumerism, it's very good for your own self-interest. You don't think that you're ruining people's lives by focusing them upon such short-sighted goals. You don't care. There's something intoxicating about accumulating wealth. The more you get, the more you want. But this is the maniac. Now, because a devotee is compassionate, she can't just remain unaffected by this organized suffering. That's what it is, organized suffering. An illusion that's organized and systematic. This is what you're up against. This is why people can't break out of their mold, even though their hearts are feeling pinched. They're crying out in their hearts. I could see that in all the people last night. Their hearts were wanting something else, but they were, to varying degrees, just caught in the rut of their circumstances. And of course, these were fortunate people. Imagine what the others are like. They require the devotees of the Lord to administer to them, to help them make their life a success. Otherwise, they're not going to get out of this vice-like grip. I especially felt very sympathetic because some of the persons were over 40, and that's a tough time to change. Anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness over 40, you should give them a gold medal or something. Not because they're wise and mature. No, but because they're trying to break free for like at least four decades of conditioning. It's definitely easier to come to Krishna consciousness when you're younger because you haven't developed so much habit energy in this life. You do have the habit energy from preceding lives to deal with, but at least when you're in your teens and your 20s, your life is not yet a done deal. But by the time you're in your 40s, you've got so many mental patterns you've accumulated. Your body's habituated to certain things, your mind's habituated. It's very hard for someone over 40 to just say, okay, I accept training. That's why there's the expression, you can't teach old dogs new tricks. And by the time you become 60 or 70, you're like what Prabhupada called, you're a fossil. You're petrified. You can't break out of your mold. Sometimes people do that, but they're rare. Therefore, Palabharaj's conclusion is Komara Acharit Prajna Dharma Bhagavatariha. From the very beginning of life, start your Krishna consciousness. Or start as soon as you understand the need to take up the foremost responsibility of your life. Either when you're young or as soon as it hits you. Wow. Why should I waste my life? Let me do this. I may be 40, 50, 60. Doesn't matter. Start now. So that is Prahlad Maharaj's instruction. Today we're celebrating the appearance day of Lord Vamana Dev. Keshava Dita, Vamana Rupa, Jaya Jagadishare. By his Leela, his pastime of asking for 3 steps of land to Bali Maharaj and then taking the whole universe. He's showing that everything is there in the Supreme Enjoyer, even cheating. God, and as Brahman, enjoys cheating. Of course, by his cheating, everyone benefits. You can't say that about your cheating. But by Lord Vamadeva's cheating, everyone benefits. Whether Krishna kills, whether he cheats, whether he romances, whether he fights, everyone simply benefits. That is God. So, you know the circumstances. How Bali Maharaj, the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, had conquered the universe. And the demigods were all in hiding. And so the mother of the demigods, Aditi, underwent austerity. And prayed to the Lord, please come and rectify the situation. I'm feeling separation from my sons, the devas. So the Lord appeared as Vamana Rupa, beautiful Brahmana boy. And he went to a yajna site where Bali Maharaj was having a yajna. Because Bali Maharaj was a Vedic Kshatriya, performing yajnas, giving charity to the Brahmanas, like that. So as he and his priests were doing this yajna, they looked and they saw something that looked like the sun rising nearby. You've never seen a person like that. So glowing, so green. You think the sun has just appeared right next to you. That was Lord Vamanadeva coming in the form of an 8-year-old brahmachari. And so Bali Maharaj was immediately taken by the beauty of the Lord. Oh, wonderful Brahmana boy, what can I do for you? You know, my family is renowned for giving charity. We never refuse charity to any authorized Brahmanas. Tell me what you'd like. And so, Lord Vamanadeva replied, I'll just accept 3 steps of land. That's all. And Bali Maharaj was just astonished. My little boy, you're very inexperienced. You're asking me for just 3 steps of land? I'm Bali Maharaj. I can give you villages, thousands of elephants, beautiful girls for your wives, all these things. You're just asking me for 3 steps of land? You're very inexperienced. And then Vamanadeva replied, someone who's not satisfied with 3 steps of land won't be satisfied if he possesses the whole universe. Watch out. And Lord Vamanadeva gave very practical instructions about how there cannot be happiness unless you're satisfied with whatever material opulence is due to you by daiva, by destiny. This is a revolutionary concept. Real happiness means to be satisfied with whatever wealth comes your way according to your destiny. And just accept it as that. And then what? Do nothing? No. Use your time not for unnecessary accumulation of wealth, but use your time to become Krishna conscious. This is an art of how to live. People might consider this being fatalistic. What, you don't get out there and struggle and try to get more and more? No, you don't. You understand you can't get more than what you do from your past activities. So you make your endeavor for becoming Krishna conscious. Everyone's allotted a different amount of material opulence according to their past life activities. You get it no matter what. This is very revolutionary. In other words, you can't increase the amount of material happiness you're due by 1 drop. And you can't decrease it by 1 drop. But in demoniac society, people are taught, wealth is out there, go and get it. It's like I was talking to some devotees live in Slovenia. They're returning to God's land next month. So they were telling me how now that Slovenia has joined the EU, all the property prices have gone up, and the multinational corporations are coming in, buying up all the factories and closing them down, so they have a monopoly. And so now, as the sweet benediction of being part of the EU, Slovenia has UK property prices and Slovenian salaries. It's a complete ripoff. Their property prices have gone through the roof, but the salaries have remained the same. It's impossible to live like that. This situation in Russia, all the prices have gone sky high in the Western capitalistic way, but people's salaries haven't. So it's just to see householders try to live, and that's those circumstances. Oh, it's just cruel, practically. What can you say? The cards are stacked against you. You can't win. Everyone's reduced to serfdom, like a peasant, medieval peasant. It's all out of your control. So I was telling these devotees, well, if you're going to pay UK prices, you might as well get a UK salary. You should move. Not because you want to be you want more material opulence, so you want to be more materially recognized. You should move so that you can spend more time in your Krishna consciousness. You don't have to work so hard just to pay for your house. So this is what's going on these days. The real art of happiness, which is to accept whatever wealth is due to you according to your past karma, don't endeavor for it, but endeavor for your Krishna consciousness. That's lost. No one understands it. They think it's crazy. How you cannot increase your material happiness by one bit, no matter how hard you try. In other words, even if you do nothing, you'll get all the material happiness that's supposed to come your way. Very mysterious for those who live in this current so-called civilization. Especially if you have like a Protestant work ethic. Which, work is good. Making money is good. So the more money you have, the harder you work, that means the better person you are in the Lord's eyes. Because work is virtuous, it transforms your character. The Protestant work ethic. What is the knowledge of Bhagavad Dharma? Work for your Krishna consciousness. You're going to get what you're going to get in terms of your material happiness and distress anyway. That's the real secret of happiness. Don't bother trying for it. Try for Krishna consciousness, which is beyond material happiness. Sometimes even our own devotees have a hard time understanding this point. In this way, a devotee is peaceful. Actually, Vamanadeva explains to Bali Maharaj that the cause of material existence continuing is dissatisfaction with your currently allotted amount of happiness and wealth. That is the cause of continual material existence. Because you have unfulfilled desires, and these unfulfilled desires push on the wheel of repeated birth and death, keep it spinning. Oh, I didn't get this. Oh, I didn't get that. Oh, I need this. That feeling is causing the wheel of repeated birth and death to continue. But all you have to do is say, I'm going to get what I'm going to get, so just let me endeavor in Krishna consciousness. And then that wheel starts to slow down and come to a halt. But it's the unfulfilled desires that keep the cycle of repeated birth and death revolving. This is what Bhagavad Gita explains to Bali Maharaj. That is the cause, the hetu of material existence continuing. Unfulfilled desires because a person is not able to accept their allotted amount of material happiness and their allotted amount of wealth. Very interesting. So when I talk to devotees, like when I was in Andrew Vrajadharma, I was talking to devotees from London, they were all, I could see they were like 20 times more trapped than persons I talked to in Cardiff. They just had layers and layers around them of just prefabricated obligations and responsibilities. They just couldn't break out. You could see their hearts were suffering, but you know, it was just, they were bound tight. Mm-hmm. So I was discussing that does it have to be this way? But unless they see an alternative, what can they do? They don't see an alternative. Yeah. They just resign themselves to living like that. Yeah. So here in Wales, you can show people how to live a simple life in Krishna consciousness, and this is compassion. People can maintain themselves fine, but their real achievement in life is something else. It's their Krishna consciousness. So this is Vamanadeva's lesson to Bali Maharaj. So after Vamanadeva spoke, Bali Maharaj said, "Oh, very well, okay. You just want 3 steps of land. Take it." At that point, Shukracharya, his priest, flipped out. Wait a minute. You understand. You're dealing with Vishnu. He's going to take everything. Don't worry. Like a good lawyer, I'll get you out of this one. Your promise to give him the 3 steps of land was not preceded by the word Om. According to such and such minor obscure Vedic Shastra. If the promise is not preceded by Om, then it does not have to be fulfilled. Furthermore, how can you fulfill your promise if Vamadeva takes everything? All your money, you won't be able to practice religion anymore. And money is needed for religion. For yajñas, especially for remunerating the priests. Especially remunerating me. If you give all your money away, or Vamadeva takes it, you won't be able to do dharma. Therefore, the right thing to do in this situation is not to fulfill your promise. And, let me advise you, in this situation, you have a right to lie. Just like when a beggar comes to a rich man and asks for charity, the rich man, if he wants, he can say, I have already given my quota to others. I'm sorry, now there's no more. So you can also do that just to protect your religious position, because dharma depends on wealth, on artha. So if you act in a way that's disadvantageous for your financial position, you won't be able to be religious. This is Shukracharya's clever words, I think. Because he was afraid. If Vamanadeva wipes out Bali Maharaj's wealth, well, how will I live? Where will I get my donations from? This is why it's important that devotees try to demonstrate leaders who are not excessively caught up in the economic development, because people have a hard time separating real religion from economics. By the devotees keeping that clear, the devotees make it easier for people to understand the most confidential truths of dharma that simply serves to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. Otherwise, as I was saying, I think yesterday, when I asked my mother, why does your minister get a salary of $500,000 a year? She said, it's the Lord's blessings. He's doing the Lord's work. Well, it's all natural. They can't see. I tried to explain, you know, the Lord's blessings have nothing to do with his salary. And in fact, he would be dearer to the Lord if he just demonstrated even just living in a middle class home, and just like you're living, why can't he live as you're living? And she'd know how to answer. She just thought, well, if he's blessed by the Lord, he must be entitled to more prosperity. So, the more that we can demonstrate to people what real religion is, the better it will be for people. Otherwise, they'll have no idea what it's all about. We have to show them that Krishna's instructions are practical. They're thinking, you Hare Krishnas are escapists. You're not dealing with reality. Just like one 17-year-old guest at the program last night, she told me, I was told by my parents that if I became pregnant, that would be much better, much more preferable than me becoming a Hare Krishna. That's the mentality. It's tragic. Very tragic. People think, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? It's not in any way connected to the real world as we know it. Yet they're suffering so much, but they don't want to admit that. So we have to show them how to live a peaceful, simple life in Krishna consciousness. If they don't see it, they won't understand it. That's the fact. So we can think about Vamadeva's lessons given to Pali Maharaj. Vamadeva cheated him, took everything away, and Pali Maharaj accepted it. Yes, my lord. At that time, when Vamadeva expanded his three steps to cover the whole three worlds, upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, then Pali Maharaj could understand this is the Supreme Personality of God. And he surrendered. In this way, the Lord gets the name of Tribhikram. He's got the three huge steps, or Mahakram, great steps. All right, any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, we understand that with Krishna and his deity form, that the deity is non-different than Krishna, and that Krishna has various energies, but he's one but different from them. So how does it work with the presiding deities of the material universe and the elements that they control over? On that?
I'm not such an expert in demigod puja, but certainly you can't apply Chitta Veda Tattva to the demigods. That is in terms of Krishna, who's non-different from his energies. Shakti, Shakti Mator, Veda. The Shakti, the energy, is non-different from the Shakti Mator, the possessor of the energy. In material life, everything is separate. The soul is separate from the body. The person is separate from their name, their fame, their qualities and activities. But on the spiritual platform, everything is absolute. So, the demigods control various aspects of material nature. The personality of the earth has a form. Has an existence. As for the minute details of the relationship between such predominating deities and whatever they're controlling. Yes,
you had a preamble on the serfdom, and I was wondering what your opinion is on Western civilization and how prices and economic development is far outstretching our ability to pay for the goods. And do you think we're just going into a new period of serfdom where people are just paying for an existence?
That's nothing new. That's the name of the game. It's life in the material world, you know? As Prabhupada explains here, the asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification even at the cost of others' happiness. That's life in the material world. As Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvatakur said, there's only two classes of people in this world, the cheaters and the cheated. At one moment I'm cheating you, another moment you're cheating me. That's all that's going on. It's always been like that. So, basically, the whole course of material existence and sociological development simply means different ways of cheating. You get cheated under communism, you get cheated under democracy, you get cheated under capitalism. Just how are you going to be cheated? That's all. So we're against all these isms. We don't praise any of them. But we may give a little credit if a certain system allows us to preach more and another system doesn't allow us to preach. But that's all. Otherwise you consider them all bad. So, if you understand how the people are being exploited, then naturally if you have a kind heart, you look for the way to benefit the people. The only way they'll benefit is if you can introduce Krishna consciousness to them. Otherwise the cycle of cheating goes on and they'll never get out of it. So then the question is, how much do you care? And how much are you willing to sacrifice so that others can be relieved of their horrible, distressed, exploited condition? That's you have to ask yourself. You could easily say, well, you know, okay, been in the ashram a couple of months, maybe, you know, I could just be more effective just out there, just, you know, being friendly with everybody and just pick up a bit of this, pick up a bit of that, you know. Right, you can say that, right? But if you understand, the best thing you can do for yourself and others is to focus on Krishna's lotus feet. Then you'll be preparing to actually do the greatest good. If you want to be a doctor, you have to train first. So now you've entered the medical university. You ever know persons who've gone to medical school?
Yes, one or
two. Yeah, they had to focus, right? It was serious business. Maybe law school, you went to law school? Yeah, it's law curriculum difficult. You had to focus, right? It was serious business. You had to learn all the laws. And even to be a taxi driver in London, you got to focus, right? You got to take this awesome test, right? You know all the streets in London. So why can't we focus to be Krishna conscious? It can be done. No matter how old you are. You can be done if you're determined. But then you have to analyze what are the forces that are trying to weaken my determination. As time takes your life away. Clock is ticking. So the devotee who is most focused is the devotee who will be able to remain immune to all this battering from the illusory energy. And the battering is constantly going on. Can't you hear it? Oh, Simon! Simon! You're still young. You're strong. You're witty. Come out and play, Simon.
I'm not so young.
Oh no, but you know, Lucy doesn't want you to admit that. You know? You're not 50 yet. You don't have to take Viagra yet.
That would lead to illicit sex, though.
Huh?
That would lead to illicit sex.
Oh, certainly. But try to say Maya doesn't speak like that to you at first because you're a devotee. She respects that you're a devotee. Instead, she just beckons you out so you can broaden your vision. Then all the other gross stuff comes later. Just come out. There's spirituality everywhere. Show a new way of preaching. And just being with everyone and everyone with you and just letting it all flow in its own way.
And then, of course, sooner or later, you know how that winds up. You wind up on the lap of a new agey spiritual girl.
Let's read the I Ching together. First we're dying at a vegetarian restaurant.
Probably Govindas.
Sure, Govinda, sure. I appreciate all spiritual endeavors. The Hare Krishnas have done a great thing. They've done so much for vegetarians. Well, sure, you want to go to Govinda's? I'll go with you. I'm open minded. I'm open. And then we'll go back to my flat. And we'll also be open.
That's a thing. It'd be good to have a nice, strong man like this around. Do the gardening, fix the house, you know, fix the car. Practical.
Yeah. You probably want to start being a lawyer again.
I won't say that at first, though.
This guy needs a good box.
He's strong.
It's necessary. And, you know, can bring in some money if I just motivate him. Yeah.
I was due for that song.
Huh?
I was due for that
song. We have to be careful that we don't get contaminated. We have to be careful. Just like if you know you're in an environment where there's contagious disease, you don't want to go there, or if you do, you're very careful. It's like the divers who are going into the depths of the floodwaters in New Orleans. As soon as they come out of the water with their diving gear on, then the guys hose them off because they're going into toxic water. They don't know what the guy's encountering. So even though he's got a diver suit on, they don't take any chance. They hose, as soon as he comes out of the water, they hose him down. They're taking all precaution. They have helicopters going over the city, spraying insecticide. They're so concerned, disease could be spread rampantly. They ordered the city to be evacuated, mainly out of concern for disease. People didn't want to leave. There are 15,000 or so people who refused to leave. No, they came and they get out. You've got to get out. We don't want an epidemic. So similarly, a devotee has to be concerned with the widespread contamination, picking up viruses. You don't want that. So it's not that we're being fanatical, we're just being practical. Mm-hmm. Protecting ourselves from the rampant illusions and delusions. We've got our work cut out for us, learning how to master our mind and senses. That's a whole career in and of itself. What to speak of trying to understand Krishna? That's a complete career. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Two questions, if that's okay.
First one.
The first one is, you mentioned about conditioning and the effects of conditioning, how it can actually start us from our progression in Krishna consciousness, how it can become an obstacle. Mm-hmm. We sometimes find that, well, I do anyway, because of conditioning, you do things in a manner that you don't want to hurt the person because you have so much respect for them, but by actually doing it, you actually end up causing them great offense. And actually,
by doing what?
Your heart is that you have deep respect for the individual and you have a lot of compassion for the individual. And you end up doing something untoward and end up actually hurting the person themselves. But that's basically down to your conditioning and the way that you...
All right. Everyone's conditioned. So then you just apologize. You offer your obeisances. What's the difficulty? if you act just like for myself, sometimes in the course of email communication, because I like to deal with 60 emails a day, an email is, can be a very impersonal, cold medium. So, but yeah, you know, I just may reply very briefly to a message from a godbrother, and then later I can detect that you know, he may be feeling like, you know, why such an abrupt reply? And so then, I mean, I'm sorry, but you gotta understand, I get 60 emails a day, and you know, besides, I don't like email so much, and okay, it's all right. But yeah, we're all sensitive. The biggest mistake is to think that you're the only person who's sensitive.
I mean, I think it's just like,
and the other guys, they aren't sensitive.
Yeah.
Everyone's sensitive. Just some people show it and some don't.
It's just the fact, you know, myself, and I got raped, but actually to actually offend a devotee hurts even more than that. And, you know,
everyone has their material horror stories.
Yeah. But you know, you
hear what I said? Everyone has their material horror stories.
But you know, you feel that it's more of a hurt when you actually, you know, it hurts even more when you hurt or offend your devotee.
Then you just offer your obeisances.
Okay.
That's all. Devotees are forgiving. It's one of the devotional qualities. It's inevitable in living and associating with each other that, you know, sometimes you'll rub someone the wrong way, they'll rub you the wrong way. But if you just say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that." Well, these things are necessary for smooth social interaction amongst devotees. It's good also to become more and more personally considerate, because Vaishnavism is 100% personal. Krishna is a person. So you don't have to, you know, persecute yourself. Just say you're sorry. You don't have to kind of wallow in it, you know what I mean? "Ooh, I'm such a wretch. Oh, that Prabhu wanted another samosa and I ate the last one. Woe is me, I'm going to go to hell." What about all the mistakes you make that you don't see?
That's horrifying things someone points you out to me. Quite humbling when you do.
This is a hospital, and the patients are becoming well, so.
My second question is, you know, those that are living out of the ashram situation and are actually working secularly,
mm-hmm.
and how do you get over the feeling that you have when you're working secularly, and all really that you want to do is you want to just be with the devotees? How do you sort of, you know, get over that feeling, you know, and lock into the work that you're doing? Because when you're in work, you just really don't want to be in work, because you want to be around and helping the devotees and working with devotees.
Mm. There are different situations for different types of persons in Krishna consciousness. Not everyone is meant for ashram life. And so, if you're not meant for ashram life, you've got to support yourself in a certain way. This is practical. So the way to get over that hang-up is, don't just work for yourself. That's the big mistake that's often made. You work just for me. Even if you're maintaining yourself, you're working to maintain yourself as a devotee, that gets very dry. Always try to give for the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And then you won't feel so oppressed in terms of working. You'll see. It's practical. If Krishna is the enjoyer of the fruits of your work, then that's a much different situation than if you keep everything for yourself. Even if it's maintaining a devotee, still, just maintaining is not so enlivening. But you can contribute to the spreading of Krishna consciousness, then you can rightfully feel spiritually good about that. So that's how to deal with that. And if you are working in that way, then don't get hung up about it. Don't make obstacles where there are none. "Gee, there must be something wrong. I've got to find it somewhere." Got to find something to get melodramatic about. Goodness, what happened? The whole day has gone past. I haven't had an emotional issue. Same time, chant Hare Krishna. All right?
Thank you.
Read Krishna book. Nectar devotion. Yes.
So, Maharaj, I have one quick question. Mm-hmm. I've heard that it's important that first, like, health comes first, then sadhana, then our service. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering, in regards to those two things, we know we're being too much in one way and too much in another way.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how we know when we're thinking a little bit more self-preservation, or we're not actually going for as much, you know, like,
well,
when we're thinking a bit too much about
that's why every devotee needs some guidance.
Yeah.
In that way, you keep a proper blend. That's why we need senior guidance. We may not be able to figure it out ourselves. So if we have senior guidance, then we're able to make sure we keep the proper blend of taking care of the health, addressing asana, and so on. Tarkana Prabhu, he does his yoga. Right? Does wonders for him. Yeah. He's got more energy than before. When I was at New Brajadan, when I first got there, a car pulled up and then all of a sudden I saw this saffron cloud running down the bank. You know, I couldn't compute, who is that? Yeah, and it was Jill Shivaramaraj. It really, the first thing he said was, those asanas. I couldn't compute, like, you know, in terms of, you know, the alacrity, the means the liveliness, you know, yeah, just bounding through the meadows. I said, oh, come on, it wasn't that bad. So, yes, we have to take care of these machines. Prabhupada said that when you're over 50, you have to put more time into your body. It's like Dharma Setu took me swimming yesterday. Afterwards, I was really perked up. In the Wales National Swimming Pool. What am I to call the National Swimming Pool? That's 50-meter pool. So, the body belongs to Krishna, you've got to take care of it. So if you have some question about the proper blend, you ask your temple president what I can do. Especially Sankirtan devotees have to watch it, because, you know, you think you're getting exercise on Sankirtan, but actually you're working a certain set of muscles again and again. I've seen this happen to so many Sankirtan devotees. By the time they reach 30, so if you want to go the whole future as a Sankirtan devotee, you've got to take care of the body. Whatever, find some way. Some asanas, or whatever's convenient.
What about the Welsh National Swimming Pool you recommend?
You work out with your... it's got to be something that's easily done, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that works for me, but, you know, if it's too much of an endeavor to get to a swimming pool, I don't swim. I have other methods.
Yeah.
I have in many of the centers that I visit frequently, I have what's called a rebounder. You know what that is?
No.
Rebounder is like a miniature trampoline.
Okay.
You ever seen those?
No, I don't think I have actually.
You've seen?
Yeah.
They're like maybe 1 meter wide, diameter of 1 meter, and they're about that high off the ground. They cost, maybe they cost about 40 pounds or something like that. And you just jump on them. A kirtan practice. You put on a face and picture of the Panchatattva. I do it for a half hour straight. Yeah. Or you can, if you want, you can put on, you know, some of the contemporary kirtans, you know, the reggae beat or rap music, you know. and you just go for it. You all your fancy steps. It's simple. If you want to take care of your body, it's not that difficult. So you work it out with your local leader. What a simple program. Generally, I'm not so much into devotee stores like gyms because they're really a tamagun atmosphere. But every circumstance is different. Sometimes you find a gym that's quiet during the day. Anyway, we want our devotees to have strength to do their service. I remember I was a Sangatana devotee, and suddenly at the age of 25, body just turned the switch off. I remember the last book I distributed on full-time Sankirtan. The person was this close to me as you're sitting, walking in a bus terminal that far away from me. And I had to pray to Krishna, please give me the strength to cross the distance, give that person the book. After that I knew, this is not going to work. I got to find another service. We didn't exercise back then. The word was out that if you just eat prasad in 7 years, your body turns into Mahaprasad. And in 9 years of brahmacharya, you get a perfect memory. You can remember whatever anything was said. There's the thought going on around this. So we never worried about taking care of the body. And in one sense, it was blissful, but it wasn't very practical because sooner or later everyone's body broke down. We would wear thin plastic shoes in the freezing middle of the winter, not knowing that Prabhupada had written to the devotees in Germany that if you live in cold climate, you can't wear leather shoes. We didn't know that. So we freezing midwinter in New York City. I guess the equivalent here would be like 20 below zero. And wearing these thin plastic shoes. Now they have good plastic shoes. Back then, no. Just really these thin cheapies, just paper thin. That's what we would wear. When you're standing on Sankirtan on the pavement, just after 1 hour, you just feel your feet are like blocks of ice. So when you know all these things, what was our diet? You're a full-time Sankirtan devotee. Every morning, you leave the temple with your lunch, and you used to take a 2-liter, what was it now? Maybe a 2-liter milk container made of wax cardboard, and you cut it in half, and so it's open at the top, and then there you put in halva dripping with butter, oranges, and deep fried breadsticks. That was lunch. So you know what happened after you eat such a lunch? You just snooze for an hour, and that was it, day after day. And no one could understand why devotees were, after a while, they were kind of, unable to go out and sing that anymore. You just thought, what's happening? No question of exercise. I remember they used to send out the Sankirtan party in the New York temple, and you have the oldest, junkiest vehicles because that's Sankirtan. Can't go Sankirtan in anything less than a jalopy, from Vijaya Day. Junkiest fare, it's on his last legs. That's what you should be doing Sankirtan. And you put all your, should you travel Sankirtan, you put all your possessions in a metal milk crate. You go on long 8-hour, 10-hour drives, and there are no seats in the back of the van. Whoever could sit in the passenger seat next to the driver was very fortunate. Everyone else was just on the floor of the van bouncing up and down in 10 hours. That's the way it was. Or if you're doing Sangatam in the temple, you know, had an old car, and they would, you know, I'd pile 6 devotees into the car, brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. It was Sangatam, you know. I remember in the back seat, you know, and, you know, next to me is so and so dasi, you know, and everyone's had a heavy breakfast of sweet rice, you know. And, you're attractive for preaching. And so, yeah, the car is driving to the Sangatan spot shopping center, and so so dasi is falling asleep on your shoulder. There you are, you know, 1 year, 2 year brahmachari. You know, you got so so dasi snoozing on your shoulder. That was the way it was. So now you're in the golden age. You went through all those sacrifices just so you could have a much better opportunity. But please take advantage of Any else? Ladies, any questions? Yeah, you're following. Huh? You have to, my ears are clogged from flying and having a cold, so you have to speak loud. Oh, that's a very good question. Naturally, as a yoga teacher, you're taking a position of authority. You are the master of the asanas, the master of a stress-free life, the master of relaxation. When we came in yesterday, I noticed, you know, everyone was doing their, was it a swap? The sleep asana. Very submissively laying on the floor at your feet. So, some of them will, you know, want to naturally inquire, like, well, what are you about? Like, you know, what makes you tick, you know? So that's how you use your position for preaching. You don't push it because, you know, you want people to come. You don't want the word out that you go there and immediately they give you heavy preaching. Yeah? You want them to come and support the preaching, and gradually some of them will want to hear more. Those that don't want to hear more, well, let them pay for the preaching. Those who want to hear more, you're there for them. And you can, you know, they'll approach you, they'll build a relationship with you. You can start to say, well, you know, we have other programs, I'm also there. And they'll feel safe and secure. Oh, you'll be there on that night? Okay, I'll come. They feel they know someone. It won't be like alien territory. So you can use your influence as a teacher. They'll start telling you their problems. Have they started doing that already? The people are lonely. If you understand, I think I said this before, as soon as you understand that people are so lonely today, you know how to deal with them. Everything is just a facade. You're actually very lonely. So that's how you can preach from yoga. Easy way. People are impressed by you. It's like in Wellington, New Zealand, I wanted to find out what all the yogi guests were thinking. And so I... There's one university professor, a young lady, and I asked her, you know, because all after yoga at that place, at least, you know, they have dinner, and so everyone was sitting down, and they buzzed. I said, what are they all talking about? You know, what do they say about, you know, what do they say about the place and the staff? She said, you know, often they're always talking about why do they have such peaceful looks in their eyes? Is it something, what is it? Is it a mantra? Or they said like that. They don't tell you that, though, but they actually buzz amongst themselves. What is something special. I don't know what it is. You, out of humility, may not think that you're very much spiritually, but for them, you're like a radiant sun. And they do notice. They just not going to come out and tell you that, but they do notice. Amongst themselves, they'll talk. There's something special about that place. I don't know what it is. And they'll start to look forward to coming just to get some kind of peace and clarity. So gradually you can, once they approach you, you can introduce them to other aspects of what you're offering there. If you can figure out a way that you can have more personal interaction with them before or after class, that's very nice, according to your particular circumstances. And then you'll feel even more enlivened about your yoga teaching. Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.